Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science at the Western New England University, a guy who has been incredibly helpful to this station in explaining the way that things are going. I want to talk to you about the debates and the criteria for getting on the stage. Some of that involves polling. Maybe you could explain that to us.
Sure. The Democrats have had two rounds of debates so far, in June in Miami and in July in Detroit. And you've got a field of 24 Democratic candidates. And so the organizers of these debates, the sponsors of these debates, NBC and MSNBC, MSNBC for the first, CNN for the second, and the DNC, set criteria that you had to satisfy either a polling cutoff, you had to register above a certain percentage in at least 4 national or early state polls, and or a cutoff in terms of the number of donors that you have.
Mm. Is that 2%?
It has shifted to 2%. It was, if I'm not mistaken, 1% for the first two.
Doesn't seem like a lot, does it?
The net is tightening. Well, yeah, it doesn't necessarily. But if you look at a field of 24 individuals, and this is a real challenge to pollsters to take your respondent through 24 names.
Now, how do we know which one? That's the interesting question here. So, for example, which poll, meaning which one? A recent poll showed that Senator Gillibrand, who has been regarded as a bit of a laugher in all of this, what is she doing there? You know, she's been at 0, 0, 0. And then one poll comes out and says, no, we have her at 2% right now. So now you need 2% to get on the stage. Mm-hmm. Which poll are we going to look at?
Sure. And in this upcoming set of debates in Houston, it's got to be 4 polls, so it's a pretty high bar. I can speak with some confidence about CNN because the Western New England Polling Institute just went through this certification process. CNN has a very detailed checklist of things that you must report when you are releasing your polling data, and if you do not meet that checklist, they will not report your results.
So, like,
and
what?
They do not consider you a legitimate. Well, you've got to describe just very basic things: telephone, live interview versus automated. The default, the preference, definitely is for live interview. If it's national, are you offering the interviews in Spanish as well as English? What is your breakdown of cell phones versus landlines? What is the wording of the questions? What is the sequence of the questions? What sort of what we call post-stratification weighting do you do, where you've come out of the field with your survey, you've got slightly more older people than younger people, or sometimes quite a few more older people. Mathematically, how are you weighting those to the population so your sample is representative? And it's as much about disclosure as anything else. And if you're not putting all of your methods out there, the media are not interested, and nor should they be. And those of us who consume polls, and I mean voters, not just academics or journalists, need to demand this information. And if you don't get it, move on. Just don't look at the data. It's just something you want to be very skeptical of. So CNN goes through that vetting. ABC, which is sponsoring the September polls, September debates, goes through that vetting as well. And so that's how these media organizations determine who's legitimate in terms of their survey data methods and their transparency about those methods.
Okay, let's go to Massachusetts, because you are, after all, a Massachusetts pollster, and we depend on you to tell us what's going on in the Bay State. So let's start with this. Senator Markey is up, right?
He is indeed, yes. He'll be up in 2020.
In 2020. Is he in trouble?
Hard to say. So if you look at his polling data, and there hasn't been a lot of polling on the race, first let's think about favorability. About a third of voters in the state have a favorable view, according to a Suffolk University poll that was done in June. Somewhat less than that have an unfavorable view, but about a third of voters have no view of Senator Markey. And he ran in a special election to succeed John Kerry in 2013, ran for a full term in 2014. Prior to that, had served in the House of Representatives for a couple of decades. That you're not that well known heading into the cycle is something you want to be worried about. He has labored in the shadow of the state's senior senator, Elizabeth Warren. And so in that voters don't have strong views on him is in some ways not a surprise. Up to this point, his primary challengers, Shannon Leese-Reardon, a progressive attorney from Boston, and Steve Pemberton, an HR executive, not polling very well. Suffolk did a primary matchup of likely voters. Markey was at 44%. Leese Shannon and Pemberton were each at about 5%, with the balance undecided. So not a bad position to be in. But recently, a mystery poll emerged where someone was doing a telephone survey of voters with a matchup in between Markey and Joe Kennedy III. Which it's funny in the polling industry, there can be campaign pollsters who work under the radar, under contract to candidates. They're not required to release their data. They might have a survey in the field, but in Massachusetts, folks may get a call, individuals who might be journalists, who might be political activists, maybe faculty, political science professors. And so people say, hey, who is this? Is this you? If you're a public pollster like we are, or Mass Inc. or Suffolk, you might get some calls. Hey, is this your poll? No one has claimed this mystery poll.
Describe for everybody who Joe Kennedy, other than with the name Joe Kennedy, is.
Sure. He's the representative for the 4th Congressional District, just south of Boston. He took over the seat that Barney Frank held. He has served since 2013. Rising star in the Democratic Party, was given the assignment to respond to President Trump's State of the Union address in 2018. Generally expected to someday represent Massachusetts in the Senate. He has said he's running for his House seat. There is a draft Kennedy movement out there that emerged recently among Democratic activists, saying it's time to take on Kennedy's 38. He's young. He's dynamic. It's time to take on an entrenched incumbent like Ed Markey. Kennedy has said over and over he's running for re-election to his House seat, but it is an intriguing possibility, an intriguing matchup that has captured the imagination of the political class in Democratic circles in Massachusetts.
My problem when I interview Tim Versalotti, everybody, is that he has so much information that I get impatient, and I want to ask him 1,000 questions, but I'm here with 1 minute left to go, so I'm going to ask you this. Tim, can you tell us how the governor is doing, the Republican, in the blue state of Massachusetts?
Oh, sure. So Charlie Baker, generally labeled the country's most popular governor, Morning Consult, an online polling, it's a news organization, but with a polling component to it, routinely does these online surveys that shows he has among the highest job approvals in the country. He's taken some hits this summer, though, over problems with commuter rail in Boston, number of derailments, a number of breakdowns. And this is probably the greatest challenge to his popularity so far. He also welcomed the Vice President, Mike Pence, to a campaign fundraiser on Cape Cod. Having those photos in the media connected him to the Trump administration in ways that moderate Republicans in Massachusetts might not look favorably on that. There may the next job approvals that everyone does for Governor Baker, who knows? We might see a little bit of slippage here based on some events from this summer.
It's always wonderful to talk to our friend, a man we respect so much, Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University poll, professor of political science, and a guy who gives us the right poop on the way things are going. Thanks again, Tim. We will always appreciate your presence.
It's always a pleasure, Alan. Thank you.